This is the Ripple Effect with your girl K-Dot, where we're discussing NBA and NFL and everything in between. It's your girl K-Dot back in the Ripple Effect. You already know how it is. Shout out to the supporters. You guys are the best. The best. Absolute best. We're only growing. We're only getting bigger. I told you we're going to be handing out more gifts to everyone who's received their gifts already. Hope you like them. You know, start posting them up. You know, let them know what you got. Let them know what they other people out there can potentially win if they listen, answer questions, and, you know, engage. Stay engaged, folks. But we're going to get right into it. There's a lot going on. You already know that James Harden, Ben Simmons trade already went through. Crazy. Everybody's like, yo, that's crazy. I hate it. I love it. How about this? I love it. I get the whole argument. Yo, you trading within your division. You're making the other team better. Here's the thing. If they did not, if you have a superstar that's literally saying, that just scored 4 points the other night, it's literally saying, I don't want to be here anymore. This isn't about Kyrie. This isn't about KD. This is about me. Everybody else has literally made this about themselves. So I'm going to do the thing that I know best. I'm going to make it about myself too. And I'm going to leave. I'm telling you, I want to leave. I don't want to be here. So instead of waiting for the offseason in the summertime when he can just walk and then you get nothing, at least in this scenario, you know, you get Steph Curry. I mean, come on. This brother's proven himself, right? He's no longer living in the shadows of Steph Curry, right? Stephen Curry. Even though I'm not saying that he's definitely anywhere close to him, but I'm saying, but he's made a name for himself in his own right. We know we can tell them apart, you know? He's not just a little brother. You know, that's not exactly easy to do all the time, but he's managed to do it. But nevertheless, and you also have Ben Simmons. Like, I know all the jokes about the passing, but we also forget what Ben Simmons can do. And I was definitely part of that conversation as well, right? I mean, there is a lot of question marks surrounding Ben Simmons, but here's the thing. Ben Simmons has a lot to prove, and that can go in a good way. You know, so let's just see how it all pans out. I'm just saying it's better to get something for nothing than to just get nothing. You have to look at it that way. You know, if you're a Nets fan and you're like, why did we trade him? It had to be done. You know, I mean, let's keep politics out of it, right? What he decided to do. Let's keep even his personal decisions. Because it's like everybody's been saying, it's beyond whether he decided to get vaxxed or not. Like, that's not the conversation. It just happened to be more so the conversation because he wasn't available to play. But Kyrie Irving does have a history of not being available to play, right? Because, you know, his cousins, sisters, daughters, friends of a brother's brother had a party and he had to miss it, you know? Or I just didn't feel like I'm just not with it. I'm just not going to show up. And then you got your coach, Steve Nash, out there saying, I don't know. He didn't talk to me. He didn't reach out. I didn't hear from his agent. Nobody knows where he is. We've had those conversations before. Even though some people don't want to see that, you know, because you like the guy, and I get it. Phenomenal basketball player, but, dude, as a person, little sketchy. Like, we don't know where you're at. I mean, you're not reliable. Maybe to your family, cool. Like, we're not talking about that. We're just talking about when you assemble a team, I mean, everybody was scared of Brooklyn. Everybody was scared when it was just KD and Kyrie. Like, that's scary alone. You add James Harden in there, that's just a bunch of cheat codes. Like, that's just like, all right, they're going to get a chip. You know, that was kind of like how we were feeling when it was Golden State, when they were just stacking up their team, right? But at the end of the day, it didn't work out. There was a few red flags that kind of showed us, right, that was kind of foreshadowing, if you will, that this wasn't going to work out. I'm going to tell you how. When they were looking for a coach, the Nets I'm talking about, when they were looking for a coach and they were trying to figure out all their prospects and then Steve Nash's name came up and then eventually he got hired, what did the leaders on the team say, or just the best, you know, people on the team say, Kyrie in particular? oh, it doesn't matter who the coach is. We're pretty much going to coach ourselves. You know, Katie and I will figure out how things are going to go and run the offense pretty much between us. Okay. So how'd that work out? Right? KD probably being the only consistent one, right? I mean, yeah, he can be, you know, not can be. He's petty at times, you know. But whatever. I think you know what you're getting out of KD every time now, for the most part. But on the court, you also know what you're getting out of him. You're getting top three player, you know. Some people argue top, you know, top player, the whole league. You know, that's debatable. But you're getting a guy that gives you nothing but effort, whether it's on the defensive end of the ball, offensively, you already know he's going to be competing for the scoring title. That's just what he does. That's what makes him so great. I mean, his shooting ability, doesn't matter where he's at on the court, he's a danger. He's just dangerous. Down the lane, how you want it, KD can give it to you. Point is, he wasn't being coached. Nobody limiting his minutes. Durant said he wanted to play every minute. That's great. We want a player that wants to play every minute. But guess what? You're human. You know what I'm saying? You did have an Achilles injury, right, that kind of left you benched for a whole season, you know, plus. You saw what happened in the finals when you were putting too many miles on your body. Like, I get it. We want you to want to play every chance you get. Cool. But that's why you have a coach, to monitor your minutes, to monitor how much you are putting on your body. Because it does take a toll. 82 games is a long season. And as a basketball fan, of course, we're like, yeah, can't get enough. But honestly, it should be shortened because the games mean more. Maybe guys will stop, you know, trying to sit out, load management type, like, nope, everybody gets tired of that. You know, especially if you saved up all your money, you're trying to go to that one game out the season, you know, and then, like, none of the stars are playing. It's like, come, you know, and then you on game time trying to sell the ticket. You can't sell it because they know that they're not playing. It's just a whole mess. So, yeah, the season can be shortened. Games will mean more. Guys will play more. But here's the other thing. A lot of people may not be able to afford to go to a game because if you think the ticket prices are high now, they're going to be even worse later. But anyway, that's neither here nor there, right? The point is, great player, even the greatest of players, they all need to be coached. MJ was coached. You know, Kobe Bryant was coached. LeBron was coached. You know, it's another conversation. But you get the point. You get the point. This is what happens when you coach yourselves. And we kind of alluded to it with LeBron James and the Lakers and some of their problems, you know, and that's why you probably don't want to play GM either. Now, I'm not going to sit there and say that it never works, right? Because we can obviously name a few instances where it did work. You know, it's not like the Lakers never won a championship. They actually did. Kudos. But I thought you were chasing rings with the S on the end. Like, not chasing a ring, like the ring. Like, just that one, I'm good. You were chasing rings, right? That's long term. That's not just win a ring now. That was on some Miami Heat. Like, we about to win rings. We want to have a whole dynasty here. But we're going to make sure they're all 30 plus and everybody past their prime. What's up? That's pretty much what happened. And then, to make matters worse, only one guy takes the blame for it all. That one guy that didn't play against the Blazers last night, even though I could barely name the starting five for the Blazers last night. I don't even know who Anthony Davis and LeBron James lost to last night. But anyway, that one guy obviously we're talking about is Russ. Now, I will point out this. I do not like his attitude at this stage in the game. You got to have some type of accountability. I'm sure he is behind closed doors, but I feel like you do owe it to the fans, right, that pay the money to watch you play. Not only the fans that stay up late, especially on the East Coast, you know, me in particular, that watch you play. You do owe the public accountability. You know, you do owe them that. You do owe them at least the responsibility enough to just say, hey, I've had bad games. Like, you could say the obvious. Like, just own it. Own it. It's been bad. The turnovers, the lackadaisical on defense, just not right. You know, I mean, even James Harden, when he was going through his stuff, right, even the 4 points, he would even say, like, I'm just trying to find my role on this team. I mean, that's what you guys are supposed to be doing during film and during practice, so that's what leads me to think about the coach, right? Even Steve Nash is not off the hook of here either. Like, that sounds like a coaching issue. Why does the player, especially a Hall of Fame player, mind you, people forget, why doesn't he know his place on the team? Why doesn't he know his role? That must be very difficult to do, right? You show up to work every day, and you don't know which one you're doing. You know, just like if you at Burger King, you don't know if you on the fries, am I cleaning the bathroom? Like, I mean, what am I doing? I need to know my role so I can do it well. Maybe to come in to work, have a clear mind, you know what I mean? Maybe think about what you're going to do before you do it. Maybe, and if you already have a guy who clearly doesn't think about what he does before he does it, which is Russ, you know, because he's all motor, you need to sit down and maybe don't even have him do practices sometimes. You know, if you need to have him more in film, because this is more of a mental thing. This is more of, he needs to be more methodical about how he goes about the way he plays the game of basketball. Because that speed, that drive, that's what's gotten you this far, what's gotten you to the Hall of Fame. Like, let's not, you know, what's gotten you there, as you age, it won't cut it. Because you will be a step slower. Those 20, 21, 22-year-old guys are going to, they got you beat. You know, it does seem like he's just all in his head about this. So I do partly blame the coaching staff or whoever assembled this team, because I feel like when you were getting Russ, you knew what you were getting. Some people were probably like, oh, we didn't know it was going to be this bad. Well, if you're not coaching him, if you're not giving him a job, a very specific role, what to do on this team, you know, that makes it even more difficult. You know, and Russ's attitude don't make it no better. Because maybe he's just frustrated in the first place, but at the same time, it just sounds like a lot of miscommunication or lack thereof, you know? It's just a terrible situation. And people want to talk about Russ's turnovers. Yeah, a lot of guys at the point guard position have high turnovers, right? Because they generally have the ball more. So statistically, if you have the ball more, you're going to have high turnovers. LeBron last night had the ball a lot, had about 6 turnovers. You know, but you'll never hear about that because he had 30 points. But if you're the other team and you're moving the ball around and everybody's kind of sharing, you know, the scoring, not to mention, because if everybody feels like they're a part of it, meaning if they're getting their shots and stuff, trust me, their effort on defense is going to be on a whole nother level. They may be playing defense better than they normally would have if they see that their points are going up. I'm telling you, it's just a psychological thing. If you've ever played ball or anything like that, you know confidence is a key. You watch a couple of shots go down, you feel like you're unstoppable. Nobody's getting past you. You can't miss. All that. But when you're not getting the ball, and it's maybe just one or two people getting the ball, you know, your effort on defense is probably not going to be there. Unless that's all you're used to doing, don't get me wrong. Because there are some guys, their main role it's just to rebound and to play defense. But in today's NBA, man, I mean, not when you have the stretch four and, you know, shooting outside at the three. You got guys like Embiid, you know, they can shoot the three. They can stretch the floor. That makes it very difficult to defend defensively, to keep running back and forth and with all this help defense going on. You know, I mean, you have to think about those things. And I don't know if everybody did a good job when they assembled these teams, when they thought about these things. And it's not just about those things either. It's also about chemistry. How well guys play together when you're not doing well. How well guys receive constructive criticism, right? Can you talk to them? Or are you just friends with them so you don't have that relationship where you can say, yo, get back on defense. What are you doing? You know, when you're friends with, when you invite a friend over to come work with you, the relationship has to be different. You can't be friends all the time, right? It's not going to be laughing and joking. Sometimes you're going to have to let them know. And the same thing goes for you. Sometimes your friend is going to have to let you know, like, yo, what are you doing? Why am I always covering for you? You know, why are you getting beat all the time? You know, and then I have to leave my man to go guard yours. And then it looks like I'm the one that's not playing defense, you know, like that sort of relationship, that sort of thing. So when I look at the Nets and the Lakers, I feel like it's that same dynamic of this is what happens when players are too involved in the front office decisions. Now, am I going to say that you shouldn't be asking the best player on your team? Hey, I was thinking about trading for such and such. What do you think? I think that's paramount. You should be asking those questions, you know, if you're upper management, asking the best player on the team, what do they think? How do they feel? How will they mix with the culture? You know, that sort of thing. Absolutely. But not because you guys hang out and it's just more convenient for you guys to hang out because your schedules are the same. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. But when you have so much player input, you know, there's emotions involved in it. You know, elite, the front office, you know, they kind of get a bad rap because, oh, they're so messed up. They make these trades. They don't think, you know, they tell people they're not trading them and then they trade them because it's business, right? Everybody understands that. Well, at least most people understand it when they're not on the receiving end of it, right? When it's not them, it's like, oh, it's just business, right? Until it happens to you and then you're like, wait, that's not right. You told me, you know, oh, so now, you know, I thought it was just business. Business is business, right? At the end of the day. Doesn't matter who's on the receiving end of it, you know, right? I mean, but when players, you're emotionally involved. You are, let's face it, you are emotionally involved, so you are going to feel some type of way if certain guys either get added to the team or certain guys didn't get added to the team because maybe the best player didn't like them for whatever reason, you know? And it's like, that's unfortunate because if that was the one thing we were missing, you know, I mean, you're not exactly making the right business decision. So, you know, you reap what you sow, right? So everything is starting to, I guess it's like, everything has really have come full circle, exactly the way it was meant to be. Ben Simmons, the way he got dogged out in Philly, I don't know how anybody could have seen him coming back to Philly. I did not see it. I didn't see it. Everybody wanted him gone. So he said, okay, I'm not putting on a jersey. I'm not coming. I'm not doing it. You know, he spoke to Rich Paul and he was like, get me out of this situation. I don't care how you do it. I'll take whatever fines I had or whatever. I don't know if he was already saving up or just, you know, preparing for this, or he was just good with his money and he didn't mind taking all those fines and all those hits, you know, but he took it and now he's in hopefully with, which will be a better situation for both teams. But all we can do is sit back and watch and see what's up, right? But I like it, though. I like it because I didn't like the fact that Embiid was having the career pretty much of his, I mean, the season of his career, you know? I mean, he is always associated with injury prone, you know? And it's like, that's just unfortunate, right? Because that's something that he can't help. It's not like he's purposely sitting out, right? He just back injuries, knee, you know, big guy type, you know, injuries, you know. But he's been available. He's risen above the Ben Simmons, you know, saga. You know, he's did exactly what people have been asking him to do. Be the big man he was always meant to be. And that's what he's doing, and that's why he's in MVP conversations. He's definitely my MVP, even though DeMar DeRozan is really, you know, he's up there. You know, you can't forget about the Joker, man. He's right there. Ja, box office. You know, there's a lot of players right now that are just have you thinking, like, man, we can't forget about Steph either. You know, he's still, like, if you want to, you know, go into that top five, like, you know, those are, like, my top five right there. But, that's pretty much what it is. So I'm glad Daryl Morey was like, let's not waste Embiid's good season. We can't do that. Because if you lose Embiid, you lost the fan base. You lost the culture. I mean, how long are we going to keep processing everything, right? I mean, we've been going through the process for quite some time, and part of the process is making these moves that aren't necessarily like guaranteed, but you got to do it. You have to do it. Embiid needs the help. You got to. I think Embiid has shown you what he can do, you know, so you got to feed off of that. That pick and roll game between him and Harden is going to be ridiculous. I hope y'all ready for it. Everybody's waiting on that. So I don't think there's going to be any more four-point games for James Harden. You can book that. But, yeah, as for the Lakers loss, to get more into that, I mean, that's just unfortunate when you have no one person to blame. Like, I think it's a collective effort. You know, everybody deserves some type of blame. It's percentages, though. Like, how much blame does LeBron deserve? Mike, you know, Pelinka and, you know, Frank Vogel. You know, that's really where it boils down. Also, Russ, we can't, you know, because he's a big part of this as well, you know. But just to sit there and blame one guy, man, it's just ridiculous because they literally lost for nothing last night. Like, how you lose for nothing? What did you lose for? Like, why did you lose? Yeah, Anthony Simons, stud, for sure. I don't think anybody will disagree with that. But you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, those are one of those games, man. If you into FanDuel, which I'm a big fan of, and you picked the Blazers last night, like, kudos to you, man. Like, you definitely got some change last night. And I don't know how the heck you would call that unless you were just, you know, just one of those who just likes to bet that way. I mean, what was that about? You know, and then even after the game, when you had LeBron just kind of just saying, like, he was tired. You know, like, he just, like, his whole attitude was just over it. And it's like, I get it. Like, 19 seasons, like, playing at such a high level at 37. Like, I know I'm about to be 37 myself. Like, but, so I couldn't even imagine, not even in my wildest. Like, I can understand, like, he is tired. Like, but at the same time, when you're the leader, you're supposed to be setting the tone for the team, you know, especially publicly. I get if he was like that maybe behind the scenes, but publicly, like, you know, and LeBron is very smart, right, very savvy, especially with the media, always loves to create his own narrative, you know. He marches to his own beat, you know, and we're just behind there dancing. But at the end of the day, when he said that, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, I know he's kind of like, he's just, I did the best I could. Like, what else could I have done? You know, 30 wasn't enough for you. You know, but I don't get it. He looks at the stat sheet during the game. Just as a player, he looks at the stat sheet during the game, right? So it's like you're understanding people, you know, players plus or minus, right? How much they're really contributing to the team versus how much, you know, they're hurting the team in certain instances. But he had 6 turnovers last night. Like, why wouldn't you hold yourself accountable to that? Like, everybody wants Russ to hold himself accountable, right? Or just everybody else. If you're having a bad game, we want you guys to hold yourselves accountable, because then you know what to fix. You know where the problem is. You acknowledge the problem yourself, and then you can begin to find ways to, you know, mitigate those problems, you know, fight through it. But with him just kind of acting like, yeah, I put up 30, no matter what else ever I did, you know, whatever, I'm just going to have some wine and go to bed. Like that, I mean, but if that's how the team is, it just sounds like this season's a wash. And I've heard other people say that as well, because that's just a feeling you get. You know, I get he's saying, like, tomorrow's another day, but, bruh, like, that was rough. That was really rough, man. I mean, you can't, and just by trading Russ is not exactly going to fix all your problems. You know, that's the thing. Because everybody said, oh, you should just trade him. All right, so somebody's going to pick up that, you know, $40+ million, you know, it was like $47 option, bro. Like, nobody's doing that. Like, it's one thing if Russ was balling, right? Or at least probably trying to take accountability for his actions, because he did have a 30-point night the other night, and I'm glad nobody mentions that, right? Because we're only gonna just we're only gonna create the narrative that that he's the reason. But let's not point out facts. But but anyway, you know, you have to look at the whole picture. Like, that's really what it's about. You have to look at the whole picture, and is really just trading Russ, even if you could, which I don't see how you could, is that going to fix everything? What needs to be fixed? Is it coaching? In my opinion, it's a big part of it. You have to coach guys. You see Russ doing something that's not according to the game plan that was discussed prior to the game for him to know your job, what you're supposed to be doing, then he needs to get benched. Who cares whatever anybody else says? Like, nobody's at the game. You know, nobody's on the road. You know, Mike Palinka and, Jeannie Buss, they're not at the game. Bench them. Explain it later. Look at the stats. Highlight it if you need to. Look, this is what he's doing. When I pulled him, like, asking for permission to pull a guy to make a in-game adjustment, it just, like, how stupid does that sound? Does that sound like that you're a coach? Like, what is hindsight going to do for you in the middle of a game when you have to make those in-game adjustments? Nothing. When you assume the role as head coach, It should have been assumed that you have the right to make those in-game decisions, because that's part of the job. That is part of the job, defining roles. Right? Motivating guys. Even though at that level, I feel like your level of motivation should be a little more intrinsic. But, you know, I'm sure that somebody would want to argue that. But the best thing about it, the NBA is so exciting. Always around. Obviously around the playoffs, yeah, especially with this in-game tournament, that makes it even more appealing. But I mean, when it comes like to this trade deadline, like, I mean, you just can't move from your TV. It's ridiculous. Or even the off season when you watch all these different trades go down, I mean, the drama behind it, it's just, there's nothing else like it in sports. You know, if you watch other sports and you watch different things happen, and you're kind of like, okay. But the NBA, man, I mean, the drama behind it, you guys, very cinematic about it. I mean, it's sold. It's a winner. It wins every time. Classic. But one thing I do want to mention, just about a few broadcasters. So I don't watch First Take very often, but I happen to catch it for the most part this week. And J.J. Redick, he's like the Tony Romo of broadcasting. Am I right? I mean, his basketball mind is up there. I mean, it's like legendary. I mean, just for someone who's really gotten started just speaking about the game, the way he articulates himself, I mean, you're in awe if you actually listen to him and understand the game of basketball, not just for your casual fans, because that could be a hit or miss for you depending on your level of, you know, interest, you know, when it comes to, you know, certain things. But man, I knew he had a podcast, and I think I caught like an episode or two, but I think I'm gonna start tuning in a little bit more, just because, you know, his understanding of the game is bar none. And I really hope he comes out with a book soon, even though I have plenty on my plate, and don't worry, those are still to come. But man, I just had to do a shout out real quick to JJ Redick. I mean, awesome. And Stephen A. got killed. Like, if you guys watch their interaction, I mean, there's not many people that you can say that really took on Stephen A. Smith, because, you know, not to mention the volume and everything else. But seriously, but for the most part, he does make his points. Whether you agree with it or not, like, he does make his point, whatever it is, right? But J.J. Redick took him to school. Like, I'll say that before I move on. But NFL, Super Bowl, right? It's coming up. Some people reserving their right to wait to make their picks on Sunday. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that to you guys. I know you guys have been asking. But for the most part, if you've been listening, you already know. It's the Rams. It's the Rams. I know everybody wants the Cinderella story. Everybody loves the way Joe Burrow's playing. Not to mention everybody just, you know, everybody likes to be right. Oh, I told you about the Bengals. Like, no, you didn't. I didn't hear. If you mentioned it, if you find me a person who said that the Bengals are going all the way to the Super Bowl and possibly even winning the Super Bowl in September, holla at me. But I don't think there's anybody out there that actually did that seriously that watches it. Not somebody that just arbitrarily just picks teams. Just I want somebody who actually had the knowledge and, you know, and the foresight to kind of say, this team is on to something. As long as they keep moving and building in the right direction, they're on to something. But anywho, my team is definitely the Rams. Like I said, I'm more interested in redemption stories. That's just me. I think that's how you're going to make your Super Bowl pick, which is highly unusual, right? Usually we make our Super Bowl picks because nobody's betting against Tom Brady, right? That's usually how it goes. Or, you know, if you have Patrick Mahomes, it's like, oh, nobody's going to be able to outscore him, right? So you're probably going to, you know, probably lean more to the Chiefs or whatever, you know. Or even with Patriots, right? When Tom Brady was on the Patriots, it was more that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, nobody's betting against them. So especially after that, you know, Patriots Falcons, you know, Super Bowl, like that's still like, you know, when you had money on that game, they were up. But that's why Tom Brady's the GOAT, and that's why people don't like to bet against him. But, you know, he announced his retirement, you know, so we'll leave that alone. And we have to look at, I mean, let's just call it what it is. He's a superstar quarterback. You know, how you just won the national title at LSU just a few years ago, Heisman winning trophy, like had a season ending injury last year, you know, came in this year, had some bumps in the road your first, month or two, and then just took off running. I mean, the poise, the swag is undeniable. Just how you're just so calm and cool and collective in the pocket, making the right decisions, making the right reads defensively, taking those 9 sacks in that one game and still won the game. Like, that's crazy, that Tennessee Titans game. But I guess with Tannehill, you know, that, you know, kind of messed everything up for him, you know, and worked out very well for the Bengals. But no, I mean, the kid is an all-star. You know, he's great, you know. Not to use, you know, basketball terms for that, but, you know, he's that guy. He's that guy. So I'm sure the Bengals are very happy. They have a very, very, very bright future, whether they win on Sunday or not. But like I said, I'm more into redemption stories. So when it comes to, you know, Matthew Stafford, so many years in the league, right? 13 Detroit Lions, only really relevant around Thanksgiving, if that, because usually people are like, how do Lions get every Thanksgiving, right? No matter what their record is. But there was always questions about his game. There was always questions because the way he plays the quarterback position, right, is somewhat risque. But at the same time, but that's what makes him great. You know, because when you're almost leading interceptions, when you're up there with Trevor Lawrence, and Trevor Lawrence is a rookie and he's still learning, he also was playing with the Jaguars, and there's that. You know, it just gives you pause. It makes you think like, well, are the Rams going to have a really good game, and then Stafford's going to do something to just throw it away? I mean, we saw this with Tannehill. We saw this with Dak, right? We even saw this with Patrick Mahomes, which was surprising. So this can happen to average quarterbacks. It's going to happen to great quarterbacks, you know. But I'm more interested in to see how he's proven everybody wrong. And more importantly, OBJ. That's my guy. Why? Because I love how people can just doubt a talent like him, you know, or just create up like these like these narratives in their head, and it only makes sense inside their head or other people who think like them. You know, I mean, the work ethic has always been there. Always been there. The talent has always been there. We just needed the maturity to be there. And he's been through a lot. He has matured. You know, we've seen the growth, for sure. Not to mention going into a new system, new quarterback, you know, being told that you're the problem, it wasn't Baker. I mean, I couldn't even imagine what Baker is even saying to himself right now. You know, but he seems like, you know, I just think he's probably was like, when he found out the Rams were going to the Super Bowl and Odell had over 100 yards and he was a big reason why they were and getting better every week, I'm sure he was just like, well, sucks for me, you know, like, because he just seems like a whelp kind of guy. Like he's not going to let that destroy his day or, like, really give it too much thought, you know, kind of. I still need to get better as a team, and I still need to go off and do my thing. But he definitely seems like a, well, there you go. There, I mean, what can I do? Like, you know, all you can do is just move on, you know, and hope people don't pay too much attention about it when they start winning, right? I mean, that's what I'm thinking he's thinking. I don't think that's going to happen. But because these teams right now, I mean, especially at the quarterback position, they're dangerous. They're dangerous, you know. And Baker Mayfield is elite off the field. But on the field, he's average. Let's just face it. And seeing and maybe just being around a talent such like OBJ, I don't know if that's why he was in his own head about it and he didn't want OBJ to overshine him. I don't know. But it's just, it does lead you to, you know, at least hypothesize those type of things, and maybe we're just seeing it. I mean, I don't know, but like I said, I mean, OBJ, he needed this to kind of show everybody, look, this is who I am. This never left. Yeah, I was injured, but you guys never waited for me to get healthy. I was never really given the opportunity, and you can't blame it on my antics because there were none, you know, outside of his father showing that highlight reel, but that was like towards the end, and I think at that point it was already unsalvageable, their relationship, or at least OBJ's relationship with the Browns, you know. So I do see him scoring, you know, touchdowns, maybe at least one or two. I do see him over 100 yards, you know. But if he gets multiple touchdowns and it's like 120 yards, something crazy like that, and he ends up getting the MVP, even though they're probably going to give it to Matthew Stafford, because if he has that many touchdowns, it's, you know, Matthew Stafford. It's because Matthew Stafford threw him. So he's probably going to be the one to get it, you know. But that just would be interesting. But I just love the way these guys have been playing. And you already know what Aaron Donald and Von Miller and Floyd, I mean, Ramsey, even on the defensive end of the ball, you know, because defense is really what's going to win this game right now. Because Joe Burrow doesn't want to get sacked 9 times by Aaron Donald, Von Miller, Floyd, or any of these guys. Like, you don't want that. I don't think that's a recipe for winning. Nor should it have been with the Tennessee Titans game. But that was a whole nother story, you know. But that was more of the Tannehill's interception. But that's just not a recipe for winning. Nobody wants to go through that. Anyway. You know, that those hits hurt, and not to mention that could have been a wrong hit. You know, but we'll see what happens. It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a fun weekend. I'm glad guys are enjoying it. I'm more so glad that there are people in the Super Bowl that we have never seen before. So it also has a different feel to it. It doesn't feel like we've been here before. That sort of thing. It just feels new. It feels fresh. It's like, okay, we're gonna sit back and watch and may the best team win. But now, those of you who love the NFL like I do, we have to talk serious. Unfortunately, it's probably going to get controversial, because usually when things get uncomfortable, it's probably because it's controversial, right? Because it's either things that people don't want to believe about something that they love, right? Or they just really don't want to talk about it. And they're kind of like, this is why I watch sports, because I don't want to hear about the outside world and all that. And it's like, yeah, but we're kind of adults and it doesn't exactly work that way. That only works that way for kids. It never works that way for adults, right? There's always some reality towards it, unless you're playing video games or something. Anywho, we have to discuss the Brian Flores situation, and what has come out of it, right? So a lot of people have made some good points about it. And here's what I have concluded so far. And I say so far because in this, I feel like all of our thinkings need to evolve beyond what we already know. Because obviously what we already know and what we've already been doing hasn't been working. And I'm pretty sure the NFL is either starting to figure that out or realizing that right now. Or have always realized that, but just was like, yeah, let's just see if it'll just blow over, you know, and figure things out from there. And just if something comes up, we'll address it, that type of thing. But we have to address it, you know. A lot of people love the hiring of Lovie Smith with the Texans, you know. I honestly have mixed feelings about it. And I know, depending on which side of it you sit on, or even if you're in the middle, you're saying to yourself, why? You wanted a black man to have an opportunity, you know, as a head coach. And he's getting this opportunity, a second or a third opportunity, depending on how you look at things with his career. Okay. So how do the Texans look right about now to you? I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not trying to say somebody, you know, that maybe doesn't have, like, the resume to really go to a team that's already... I get that, but... You got to start from the bottom, work your way up. Who is the quarterback? Right? Happens to be the most important player on the team. Who is the quarterback? It just sounds like if I'm Lovie Smith, I'm happy. Maybe somewhat grateful for this opportunity. But have I put myself in a losing situation? What is to be gained here? Who is the quarterback? Or is this some just behind the scenes thing and we already know who it's going to be? Because maybe they discuss it in private and can't discuss it publicly yet for a lot of different reasons. Because we don't know about the Watson situation yet. You know, Deshaun and his, I don't even know what to make of all of that. You know, because I feel like it was really loud at one point. And now it's so quiet that we're not even able to pull out any facts and really be able to formulate any opinion about what is going on with that situation. But all we could do is just sit back and just kind of shrug our shoulders and wait for more storylines to come out to pick apart. I know Russell Wilson may be on the market. So did you guys already discuss that maybe Russell might come to Texas? Like, is that a thing? You know, there's just a lot to think about. You know, because my thinking is if you didn't have that conversation and you really just hired a head coach that may or may not even have a decision on who the next quarterback is going to be, and the fact that we really don't have one, I mean, I just feel like I'm going to be another one and done. You know, and then what did we just really do? Okay, you just hired you in the meantime until we actually find out what our team is really going to look like and then find whoever we really want to coach them. I don't know. To me, it's just not really a good look. And when you find out about all the interviews or even just the process of the interviewing, it just kind of rubs you the wrong way. Because when you think about the Rooney Rule and how it was implemented in 2003 and the Steelers organization were great for doing it, you know, very classy organization because somebody needs to do it. And if it wasn't for them, Coach Tomlin wouldn't have his job, and he wouldn't, you know, never have a losing record, being able to show everything that he's been able to do with the Steelers organization. So it's like, it worked out. But usually when you make a rule or you make, you know, just different guidelines for people to stand by, it's supposed to benefit the many, right? You know, when you think about it. So the Rooney Rule was supposed to benefit at least, you know, black people being given the proper opportunity, you know, or at least if you're interviewing somebody, right, at least the intent to hire, right? At least that's what Brian Flores thought, because to my understanding, because I actually did a little research, to actually have an interview, you know, for a head coaching job, your resume has to be pretty solid. Not to mention, you better have a whole game plan from the culture, from, you know, your own team that you want to assemble. You have to come with it. You know, and the fact that you would have to interview for multiple teams and to have different strategies, you know, what will work well with that quarterback or with that defense, that offense, whatever it is that you're trying to do. That's a lot of work. So when you have interviews that are kind of like either sham interviews or just interviews that are just, we're just having because we're going through the motions because we're trying to fulfill the Rooney Rule, it's just ridiculous, because at the end of the day, that's not what it was about. I felt like the Rooney Rule was needed at the time, but now I feel like it does need to be amended, because from what I found out, the Rooney Rule does not say in any way that the interview needs to be held with integrity. Like, what? I know, most people are like, you would think it's a given, right, when you hold an interview that it is supposed to be held with integrity, right? That was my thinking, but that is a fact. Like, it never said that the interview need to be held with integrity, and that is a huge piece. Why? Because there is a current class action lawsuit that Brian Flores is, you know, putting on against the NFL, and if they're saying in the charges that are coming up, when he's accusing them of having these sham interviews, it's not necessarily playing into Brian Flores' favor, unfortunately. Also, the interview, they, with the Rooney Rule, the interview does not need to be held with the intent to hire. I'm going to say that again for the people in the back. The interview does not need to be held with an intent to hire. So they can hold the interview and not intend to hire you. What? Then what am I doing here? What am I doing here? The whole point is the intent to hire me. That is the whole point of the interview. It's the whole point of me staying up all night. If you've ever been through an interview process, it's, you know, I can't even speak to this magnitude, but just any interview process, like any job that you may want, it takes work. You may not sleep the night before. You know, you may be up night all night thinking about the possible questions that could be asked, you know, the different curveballs, you know, things that you would have to think about yourself, really do some real intrinsic work to really sit there and say, maybe I need to know this more about myself and make myself a little bit more vulnerable, at least just more transparent, you know, to see that I do hold myself accountable. If I plan on holding all these guys, you know, 53 accountable, you know? So that was like, wow, guys, like, really? So why don't we make those amendments and put that in there? Like, if you're going to hold an interview, it has to be with the intent to hire, and it has to be done with integrity, guys. Like, really, like, I mean, how do you even hold your organization to, you know, a respectable standard? You know, and I'm even sorry to say with the Giants, like, regardless of what Tiki Barber said the other day about how he, you know, when he got all emotional and talking about the Tishes and the Maris, and it's almost like, give me a break, dude. They've never had a black coach in 100 years. In New York. How? How? 100 years? That's a lot's happened in 100 years. If you want to talk about the early part of those 100 years, I mean, won't go there. But it gets you thinking. It should get you thinking. But like I said, but then other people get made some really good points, and we'll relate this more relatable to the younger audience out there, right? So let's say you're dating someone, right? Or you just have a preference on what you date. Doesn't matter what it is. Could be white, black, Asian, Spanish, what have you. And if all your life you have dated, let's say white, all your life, this is who you end up maybe wanting to marry, kids, the whole legacy thing and pass on. That's just your thing. That's just what your preference is, right? Not necessarily means that you don't like the others, right? Doesn't mean that you don't have any, you know, hate or any harm. Like, you wish everybody well, but that's just my personal preference, right? That's just, okay, everybody's allowed to have a preference, right? Nobody's gonna, you know, it is what it is. But then someone will say to you, but would you ever date someone that's like black or Spanish or something? And you're like, just because you wouldn't mind dating them, this doesn't mean that you want to marry them though, right? You know, how are you, and then you have somebody literally saying, no. You gotta marry them though. How is that gonna work? Right? I'm sure you're probably saying, how is that going to work? Like, how is somebody going to make you have that change of heart, make you feel like that comfortable to want to do that when you've already had your preference? This is just what I like. This is what I do. Just because I date anybody else that's non-white doesn't mean that I'm going to marry them. You feel me? So when you kind of equate that to the NFL owners, you have to think to yourself, it was white for a long, long, long time. Now, does that make it right? No. 100% wrong, right? Because it's a different sort of thing, right? But at the same time, this is what they're comfortable with. This is their organization. This is the way they run things. This is the way they do business. And especially when you think about the age. Because the age does matter. Because the generation does matter. And there's a lot that has happened from now, let's say, in 100 years. Not saying that there's an owner that's 100 years, but they're pretty close. Pretty close. You know, they've seen a lot. They've been through a lot. Right? So now you're asking them, yo, or not just asking, right? You're telling them, like, yo, you need to start taking these other people seriously. And you see where they're having trouble. Now, this is not to take away from the fact that it's wrong. These practices are not right. They're not ethical. They're not professional. And racist. But at the same time, we do need to at least acknowledge the elephant in the room. And I think that's what everybody keeps dancing around. Nobody wants to acknowledge it. I'm acknowledging it. This is what they feel comfortable doing. And this is why we always feel like we're at an impasse. You know, you have Kaepernick kneeling, whether you agree or disagree. He didn't do it peacefully. He did talk to a lot of people before he did it, you know, even when he decided to sit and he started kneeling because there were a lot of servicemen and women who advised him that the kneeling was more appropriate than the sitting, because the sitting just felt disrespectful. So that's when he changed. You know, but when you think about all the different things that have been done, and then when you hear about the Gruden situation, you know, it just makes you wonder, what more don't we know about? Because we're always finding this stuff out years later. It's never really in the moment. The Brian Flores thing is probably one of the first we're really finding out, like, in the moment. Like, I was fired because I wasn't losing games and I wouldn't take the $100,000, you know. And then I got set up on all these sham interviews and not really giving a chance, even though I'm under the, you know, Bill Belichick tree of coaching, which is supposed to be like the highest of the highest, right? The Holy Grail. He's like the GOAT of coaching, right? And I studied under him, you know, and made quite a reputation with my, you know, amongst other players, athletes, coaches in the league, even media people, you know, people speak nothing but highly of him. So just for him to kind of go rogue now, I mean, I think resume does matter, reputation matters even more so. So to not give this guy the benefit of the doubt based off his reputation is not fair, because if a guy was doing the wrong thing and then all of a sudden he's trying to speak out and he's trying to, you know, make all these points, you're going to be the first one to say, but his reputation, he's done a lot of stuff though, right? So it has to go both ways. If Brian Flores has never shown us anything but hard work, integrity, passion for the game, you know, just wants to be here, doesn't want to make it all about him, if he's always made himself perceived to be that type of guy, I mean, we have to give him the benefit of the doubt and at least see it all the way through. Because the reality is we don't know definitively, but with some of the text messages, you know, some of the things that came up, it just doesn't feel right. You know, and it's just a lot of things that we have to really, we have to think about. And it's just, it's unfortunate, because I know a lot of people just, oh, let's just keep it to sports. But we can't just keep it to sports if it's not fair. I mean, sports is supposed to be like the ultimate, like, equalizer. That's supposed to be, you know, what brings us together, but if what's bringing us together is like kind of slowly tearing us apart, we got to fix that. We don't want to see anything happen to it, right? So just to give you something to think about, let me know what side you sit on and don't feel afraid to speak out. As long as you're speaking, obviously, with respect, with the intent to really want to solve problems and not just start them. All right. But I'm out of here. Peace.
This is The Ripple Effect with your girl K-Dot, where we're discussing NBA and NFL and everything in between.